Oh, okay.
Probably people running around.
Oh, okay. I hope these things will upright. That's why. First two. But that's fine.
There's a, I think it's just a little...
Oh, it's cool. I just haven't seen it. I hadn't read the guide for how to find it, you know, where the venue was, so I walked all over campus first as well. Twice. Anyway.
Yeah, we're in the corner.
Okay, I'm not sure how much time I'm going to spend because I'm leaving a little bit open for the questions and discussion at the end.
It'll be later, Jeff.
And it depends a little bit. I'm not quite sure what the audience is looking for, what kind of, how technical they are.
I'll try to get that mic to you. They're trying to record it. So.
Yeah. Bummer. Means I have to watch my mouth. Are there any more people out there?
Okay, this is a virtualization mini-conf, and this is going to be Jeff Sorensen with Zen and the Art of Portability. I'm going to have a mic to pass around to people for questions, and it would really be nice if you could get a hold of it because they're trying to record this for later. Okay, so wait, we'll beg and I'll run around. Jeff has been working on the Linux kernel since 1993. He's worked in a large number of areas in and around the kernel, including high-speed networking, Linux IE64, and various other architectures. He's written more to subscribers than he can remember, as well as working on the system library for Linux IE64. He's been a frequent speaker and many conferences here, and he works today as a kernel engineer for Solid. Go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. Yes. So I work for a company that you probably heard about before in the context of building slightly larger than average computers. They used to do graphics once in a while too, but I have had nothing to do with that. This whole Zen thing has gone back for a while for me. Basically, I tried to dodge the whole thing for quite a while, even though my manager kept saying, "Could you please look at it? Could you please look at it?" And in the end, I was probably stupid and said, "Okay, I'll take a look," because we were interested in porting Zen to the SGI All6, which is also known as SN2 in engineering, which is the systems we're selling these days. It's an IX64-based system, and slightly different in architecture than the regular PC. And so anyway, I promised to try and be nice, and since they're recording it, I better keep that promise. Just before, I've been working on this project for about 6 months now, and a few main acknowledgments. I want to thank Alex Williamson from HP, who's the 10i64 maintainer, somebody who is extremely easy to work with, and has been very good and patient listening to all my rants and screaming and pulling my hairs out, that kind of thing. Greg Edwards from SGI, who was the kind soul who kept saying, "Oh, no, it's not that bad, you know, it'll be fine." He did some of the work before me. I'm not going to forgive him for that one. And the FinIA64 community in general, because they have been very easy to work with. It's a slightly different community, but there's some, you know, some people you know from the Linux community on both sides of the fence. But the IA64 guys, who are the ones I work with the most, are very easy and quite helpful trying to come up with patches. Anyway, any more of those mobile phones and, I'll not try and scream at people here. So the agenda for this talk, I'll try and leave it up for some questions or discussions at the end, but I'm also very happy to take questions during the talk itself. If you have something that's not on the subject I'm babbling on at the moment, try and keep it for the end and we can take it there. So in order to sort of understand why porting Zen to a system like the old isn't just like a trivial, just change two compile flags and it'll boot, I'll start by taking a little sort of look at the basic concept behind Zen. Then I'll look a little bit about the differences in NUMIC systems, or especially the specific one I worked on, the Altec system from SGI, and how they differ from the PC. Then how far have we gotten, and I'm not there yet. What comes next? What would I like to see Zen do? Because there's more to it than just getting the system up and running. And then we'll take the silly and less silly questions at the end. Zen has this basic idea that everything is simple. All the hard work should be done in DOM-U, which is sort of a Linux instance which has sort of super privileged rights, and it can do all the heavy lifting. Zen, in principle, doesn't want to do I/O. So whenever one of the users want to do I/O, the request is basically passed off to the hypervisor, which then hands off the work to DOM-0. And so therefore, Zen only has very basic I/O support, which is with things like VGA, serial, and console controllers. On the old things, we don't have VGA, we don't have regular serial ports, so we have a little driver that talks to our firmware, which will give a console on the system controller. We'll get back to some of these issues. It's got sort of very simple scheduling for scheduling virtual CPUs. It's got a simple memory allocator. And I see that my friend Rusty has left the room, which is a good idea since he wrote it. We'll get back to that one. And it has this concept that everything sits on a flat memory bus. So it's kind of like you have a system bus, and on that everything is attached. The world doesn't look like that in a complicated system, so we'll get to that one too. FinIA64, one step backwards. When the IO-54 was brought out, Intel brought out this reference platform called DIG. I'm not quite sure what it stands for. But it's basically, you know, effectively it's a PC, you rip out the processor and you stick an IO-54 processor into it. And that's more or less what a DIG box is. And the initial port of IO-54 kind of took all of this for granted and expected this and that I/O to be present and memory to be located in certain places and things like that. We then used to think this was the case, but we've gotten a little bit better with that one. Anyway, if we look at our system as it is right now, the current model you can buy in the shop scales up to 10, 24 processors. Effectively, you can have 1024 processor nodes, you can have 1024 I/O nodes. And it's basically, it's all linked with this NUMA interconnect, which I'm not going to go into details about because we can talk a lot about that. But effectively, on each node, we have what we call a shop chip, which is sort of the brain of the node. And to that, you connect your CPU, your memory, your I/O devices, and it connects to the NUMA link, which is the SGI interconnect. We don't have the regular PCIO. We don't have a flat system bus. And it means if you want to talk to an I/O device, including your VGA, which is kind of interesting, you need to actually know the topology of the machine in order to be able to address the PCI bus where it's sitting. So this whole idea that, you know, we can always write to register 3F8 or whatever it is, and we'll have a VGA device there, and we don't actually have to do any of the magic about talking to the PCI buses, has just gotten out the toilet. We have the system console, which is a very neat little system controller that allows us to do all sorts of magic from a telnet prompt, and we can access that via cell call, which is, cell is one of the firmware interfaces that is an IO-54, but it's kind of like a BIOS call. And then what is interesting is whenever you want to do memory management on a system or various other things in the kernel, in this case the Zen kernel, you have to be able to do IPIs, which stands for inter-processor interrupts, and you have to do TLB flushes for the transition look aside buffers for the memory management. And on a regular system, on a regular IO-54 system, a small scale system, you can do that via a special processor command, but our systems do not propagate that information over the bus, so you actually have to go onto the node and write to a special register. And since to do basic memory management stuff, obviously, we need to be able to flush TLBs in all the nodes, which means, again, we need the whole topology information from the system in order to do such basic things. The other thing about our system, and that's one that's been very painful, because then, it's Rusty's fault, is the way our physical memory is laid out. Oh, there's one little thing on the top. And that's something I haven't even started addressing, is that our ITC equivalent, our ITC, which is the equivalent to the TSC, which is the system clock, or the internal system timer, it's not synchronized across nodes. You have to use an external clock source. So that's another thing I'll get back to understand once I get a little bit further and I actually start caring about clock drifting and stuff like that. But what's the more interesting thing is about physical memory. We can have 36 bits of physical memory on each node. And the physical addresses in the system are build up from the 36 bits, then we have two special bits which tells it about what kind of addressing, whether it's cacheable and other stuff, which we don't really care about. Oh, there he is. But in our case, there will always be 1-1. And then we have the node ID. And given we can go up to 2048 nodes with the I/O nodes, we can have some pretty large physical addresses. But sort of the basic, I mean, it's, so node 0 physical memory will be possibly be in the address range from 3, and then you've got, should be 9 zeros behind it. Once you sort of grow in node numbers, you can kind of get the idea that it can become some pretty large numbers. But the point here is there is no memory from starting from address 0. There's a lot of echo on this thing. Anything you can twist it a you hear me?
No.
A little bit more. Hello. Still okay?
Yeah.
I think this is fine. So what I've done so far after starting on this was the Linux i64 kernel has what we call machine vectors. Because the different platforms are not identical. I mean, we basically all use the same processor, but there's the DIG reference platform from Intel, then HP's machines are slightly different, SGI's machines are slightly different. So we have this function pointer table of a number of various functions in the system, which will be filled in at the very beginning of boot time to find out whether or not we're using SGI's TLB flushing routine, or whether you use HP's or we use the generic one. I think actually HP uses the generic one in this case. But in order for us to be able to use one SEN binary in all these systems, I have to do the same thing on SEN. Otherwise, we would have to have a special SEN binary for SGI and a special SEN binary for HP and one for all the sort of boring boxes. That took a good chunk of code, but it's in the tree now, and it seems to work. It supports, right now we have support for IPI, TLBs, IO register access. There's no support for general DMA, and of course, with the SEN philosophy that SEN should be super simple, DMA is not necessary. But there can be cases where you actually want to do DMA straight from SEN too. Another minor problem, quote unquote minor, is the SEN IS64 kernel has this idea that everybody has physical memory address 400,000, well, 4 million or hex. We don't have that, so I have to start chasing down places in the SEN kernel where it was actually relying on this physical address. And that one is kind of painful because you're not quite sure you found them all. You're never really sure you found them all. But I think I have them now. So that was another thing we had to do. I had to start pulling in all the topology stuff from Linux. What should be said here is that the SEN IO64 port is quite good in the sense that they're trying to recycle code from the Linux kernel as much as possible. So we basically copy over files, and we don't only if we don't have to modify a file, we put them in one directory, and if we modify it, we put it in another one and make comments, like put if this then about the changes. There was a question up there? What? 2 seconds, you get the mic.
Well, just a small step backwards that may be related. What is the situation in which DMA is useful in the hypervisor?
For some of the basic stuff, like some console controllers are more efficient with DMA. You can have block copy engines, which would be useful. So there's things like that. I mean, as long as you're not doing disk I.O. and stuff, yeah, we don't want to do that. But for instance, our systems have a block copy engine, which would be useful to have a DMA. When we got to the topology stuff here, I basically tried to recycle all the code from the Linux kernel. And a lot of this is actually just register definitions and other stuff, but it was about 12,000 lines of code, I have to say. Not a lot, but it grew the tree just a tiny bit. But now we have at least that part working reasonably well. But I'm still only working on the sort of older generation of all these systems. We have the SHOP-1 and the SHOP-2 architecture, and I've only started working on the SHOP-1. SHOP-2 shouldn't be too bad, but again, I have to copy more stuff from the next one to get to that. And we have a polling console driver, which currently only does output to the console, but since I haven't gotten to the point where input makes sense or is needed, then I'll add that when I get there. Hopefully soon, but... part of the problem is that, you know, you fix one bug and you think, okay, next time I fix one more bug, I'll get that much further in the boot process and something will happen. And then there's another 5 that pops up and it's kind of like, oh, jeez, I didn't think about that one. So, other things I've had to deal with has been to nail a number of hard-coded digisms where people were thinking, oh, we have a serial port there, we can just write to it. And you know, minor things, really, but stuff where somebody would try and write to a physical memory location to get an MCA, machine check error, because, you know, there was no response from any device on the bus on that address. And I put those, you know, you just change them with runtime checks, and I use the same system as you do in the Linux kernel for it. There were some issues about when an i64 system boots, you get this what's called an IFRI memory map, which will give you a table of all the various chunks of memory in the system, and this includes where the BIOS is located, where you have physical memory, where you have runtime space for the BIOS, and yada yada, where your I/O ports are, and you know, lots of stuff like that. And there was some, they have attributes like cacheable, non-cacheable, and stuff. And there was some assumptions made that this type of memory will always be that, and that was hard coded and stuff like that. But I mean, it's minor details, and but that's actually something that's kind of interesting when you're running on Xen, because Xen will start moaning at you if you map it one way, and because you map your DOM is mapped with page tables, Xen will start moaning at you if the user tries to access the memory in a different way than it's mapped. Whereas normally when you're running on i64, the kernel is identity mapped. And so if you have something that's actually registered as a cacheable region, but you only ever access it uncacheable, you never notice. You're just lucky it happens to work. Whereas with Xen, we actually see if we're doing something, you know, where we shouldn't be doing it. So that's the positive thing about it, actually. We haven't had any real problems with it for a long time, but we could maybe catch some interesting bugs or things that way. Another thing that I hit, which was relatively easy to fix, was on IS64, you'll have I/O ports like you have on an x86 where you do in, d, out, b. Instead, all these port registers are mapped physically in memory as memory mapped I/O, and you then write to them and make sure you do it uncached. But because on all six, they're put at an immensely high physical address, we never use it. But it's like 2, and there should be 15 zeros behind it. The problem is, because we map everything with page tables, you can't just pass that address through and put it in the page table, because our page tables don't cover that larger space. So that was another one I had to fix. But it's minor stuff. This is the one where I was really annoyed about it for a long time, and I thought I'd fix it, and then somehow I fixed it wrong, so it still didn't go away. But it's all Rusty's fault. Xen had this idea that the memory allocator it sets up a huge bitmap that maps, it basically counts all the pages in the system in the memory map and says the last page is here, and then it sets up a bitmap for every single page from 0 up to that page. But given the location of our physical memory, and starting from sort of a relatively high address, you have a lot of zeros at the beginning. And so whenever you wanted to get a page from it, the boot process of Xen, it would go into the allocator and it would scan that array again and again and again to give me the, you know, 300 pages I needed to boot. Once I fixed that, it reduced my boot time by about 3 minutes. Sort of effective differences there. But we still have the problem that we have these huge holes, so we take up quite a lot of memory that way. But eventually, the memory allocator should be replaced with something that actually knows about sparse memory. There was another little detail. Is that Xen likes to print out these dots for every page in the bitmap. And I would get about 2 or 3 pages of dots on my screen at boot time. And given that the console using this BIOS call isn't very fast, it took a fair amount of time just printing stupid dots. But I mean, again, it was fairly easy to fix and just make it print dots for actually existing memory. So that's one of the things. Another thing that's kind of interesting is Xen, all the DOM users will be given what's called metaphysical memory. And so that is, the client thinks it's really physical memory, but it's virtual memory. And what Xen on IS64 didn't do was to map it so it actually fits where the physical memory is in the system. Because on all six we encode, as you saw earlier, the node ID in the address, our kernel wants to know, it wants that node ID, and it uses it to do all sorts of stuff in terms of performance and how the memory is allocated. And so Sen didn't, it just started sort of handing metaphysical addresses out from the bottom up to the client. And that didn't work very well when I tried to boot my DOM 0 kernel. So I had to change it to actually try and put the metaphysical memory in the same ranges as, so the metaphysical pages I get, I need to know what physical node they are on, and then put them into a block that fits that when I hand it down to the DOM. Because if I don't do that, then the DOM will, first of all, think the memory is in a different place, and it will hand it out internally. So it will think something is on DOM in node 0 when it's really in node 3, and then it will pass it on and use it as if it was on node 0, which means you get a much lower performance because you're going across the interconnect all the time to access some memory which you think is the fastest memory you have in the system. I mean, that's the part of the thing with a numerous system is you need to be aware that the cost of accessing memory is different depending on where in the system you are. And so this is one thing I want to see improvements. I'd like to see improvements in Sen over the longer term as well, not just for the boot process. It showed up that Isaku Yamahata from DA Linux Japan has started doing some of the same stuff in plating the memory in the right way because he needs it for PCI domain support. But it showed up he's done almost the same thing. Most of it was involved ripping out code that thought itself was smart. And then there's a question there is, this is only for DOM 0, the management thing right now, but what do we do for DOM use? Because for the DOM use, you could basically just say that we always present this DIG-style virtual system to the DOM U, and you run a DIG kernel on it, which we could do, but it's not going to be very efficient. And there'll be some issues coming back to that, but I'll have that on a later slide. The current status is Sen boot, DOM 0 loads, and DOM 0 explodes. Naively enough, I keep thinking, okay, the next bug, and I'll actually get DOM 0 loading and booting. But whenever, realistically speaking, it's going to be several months before we get there, and it's probably going to be 6 months at least. If anybody from my marketing group asks me, it's at least a year before this is useful, bootable, and you can boot your DOM 0 client, because I don't want to have anybody, no one coming. but it's still the chase a bug, fix it, and then the next couple of one surfaces. There's quite a few features from Altec that I'm currently just ignoring or just not presenting down to Sen, which I need to, on the longer term, start presenting so Sen can benefit from them, like the block copy engines and other things like that. We have these special I.O. nodes, which currently are not supported at all. As I said, I only started working on Shop 1. We'll have to do Shop 2 support later. There's a number of hardware workarounds. These guys who design microchips have a tendency to make them buggy. I don't know why, but they always do it. They fix one bug and they introduce another one. It's a pain. But so because of that, the Linux kernel has quite a lot of fixes and workarounds for chip bugs. And we need to migrate all those into Sen as well. Maybe, but I'm only saying maybe here, I'd like to do VGA support for the console too. But given that nobody in their right mind actually wants to hook up a monitor to a high-end system, maybe I won't bother. I mean, how many people are running around with a monitor on a trolley in a data center when it comes down to it? Especially when you can just hook up an Ethernet cable and tell me to it. I mean, what else would I, on my wish list? Scalable memory allocation. I haven't even gotten to the point now of thinking about the scalability of the vCPU scheduler, but I'm not too optimistic. Might be wrong, and I'd love to be proved wrong, but if we try and boot this on just a small system like 64 or 128 CPUs, that it actually scales. Because that's an area where Linux Ingo Molnar and Linux did a lot of work to make the scheduler actually scale onto high CPU counts, and I'm not convinced that Sen has benefited from any of this yet. We need the metaphysical placement for all DOMs. I'm interested in having an option where I can provide this dummy layout, because it would allow to boot these lesser operating systems, you know, like things you don't want to talk about, that doesn't know about real computers. So we can check that off as a checkbox item and say we can do that too, not because I actually want to run it. The other issue with it is that in Linux, we have the option, Alan, I think there's somebody yelling to the mic. In Linux, we have this libnuma, because user applications, threaded applications on a NUMA system need to know about the memory, what node and stuff they're on too. And if we try and do that where the memory is mismatched, you can probably get even worse effects than if you're just randomly dealing with it. And you have the same problem with scheduling of tasks, because right now the scheduler could say, well, this thing is now sitting on this node, let's not migrate it off node unless we have to. But if the virtual processors are not matching the physical nodes, you will have all this random flying around. You're not quite sure what they, you know, you can often end up in a situation where what you're doing is not just at random, it's even worse than average. And for the same reason, I want to be able to bind the virtual CPUs to physical nodes. So I'll say these virtual CPUs will only ever be scheduled on the same within the same physical node. And then possibly IO, MMU, DMA support. Somebody up there asked for the microphone.
Yeah. Why do you care about scalable memory allocation inside NAND?
Because I don't... Well, at the boot time, it's a problem right now.
Yeah.
And we have the issue of passing memory around to the DOM. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe I haven't gotten far enough to find out it's not really an issue.
So then you used to copy slab.c and hash to find a whole bunch of stuff out at the top so it wouldn't do things like this one. And I tore that out and wrote the current one. Because there are like 33 allocations or something to boot.
Mm.
And of course, there's an allocation every time it starts a new domain. And it was this deallocation. So it wasn't a critical. That's why it's just a simple, stupid allocator. We should extend it to cover sparse memory, which would solve all.
My worry is what we're going to do when we get further, when you want to take memory away from one DOM and assign it to another one. How are we going to deal with things like that?
Okay.
But I haven't gotten to, I mean,
yeah,
I haven't seen a use of that problem.
Yeah. The original was so over-engineered.
Mm.
But, you know,
yeah.
We cut, I don't know, several blinds out. Just crap. So, yeah, because Zen simply did not do memory allocation by design almost. So, yeah, I just query whether you're actually ever going to need to go that far.
Maybe we don't need to go that far, and we just need the sparse memory support, and that'll do it.
Yeah. I can fix the sparse memory.
Yeah, that would be a nice feature to have. But there's also, yeah.
A couple comments and a question. First of all, the scheduler's got to be scalable because it was written by an SGI, IRIX. Scheduler guys, it must just work.
You don't want to talk to me about Iris. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't exist.
The question starts to come up about how much time do you want to spend pulling things out of Linux and putting them in Zen versus...
Let me get to my last slide, okay?
Okay, and finally... anything you do with DOMU and topology is not a violation of the concept of virtualization, but it's actually time that it's the domain to a physical machine. So there's been a lot of back and forth in the Zen community about whether there's value at all in providing topology information to the domain. It's clearly useful in the Altix environment and even in the reasonably low in x86 64 environment.
I mean, that's one of the points I have. I think it's on the next slide. Yeah. Is that systems nowadays, basically, PCs are no longer PCXT. And most of the systems you get under your desk nowadays, if you go and buy one, is actually a small NUMA system. So if Zen actually wants to be somewhat efficient, it should address some of these issues. The difference is just that Altix shows the problems far more than a PC does, but they're still present, and there's no reason not to make them efficient. It's true, if we provide NUMA information to a running Zen, a user application uses it, we do snapshot and migrate it to a different physical system, that is no longer true, and that information will be false, and that's just too bad. But it, as long as you keep running on the same running system, which is of interest to in a lot of user cases, it would be a lousy, in my opinion, a lousy idea to ignore. The other thing here is Sen has this idea that everything's super simple, and I have to stand up. You know, I've only spent 14 years on Linux, seen it evolve. A lot of the complexity in Linux was put in for reason. It's because computers are not that simple when it comes down to it. And ignoring it is, in my book, a little bit naive. But I mean, it's of course a question of how do you want the code to be super simple, or do you want something to perform? And I just don't, personally, I just don't see the point in creating a virtual system if it doesn't at least perform reasonably well. And therefore, I mean, is Sen ever going to become a performance platform? I'm not sure. I mean, I actually think Sen could, or any hypervisor, could become a performance platform. I mean, you still take a little hit from just running Linux or something else on the bare metal. But you can actually, if you do it right, you can get Sen or something like that perform pretty well, even in a virtualized memory, virtualized environment. And for me, the one that keeps baffling me, and it just never gets to me, is why we keep being dumb zero and Sen separate. For me, that is just beyond logic. But if somebody can explain it to me, I'd be quite interested in knowing. Anyway, did that sort of cover your comment about? Yeah. Okay. Question.
It's obvious that the reason you keep them separate is no, in any case. Separation, I think, originally was all about isolation and security. If you really look at it from a security perspective and care at all about the security isolation of multiple virtual machines, it's not realistic to throw DOM 0 out of the picture. Mm. So calling a small hypervisor secure is not entirely disclosing all of the information. At one point, I think there was some hope that there would be the ability to do common criteria type auditing of that, and that's just completely unrealistic at this point.
I mean, to comment on that too, I also have the opinion that, I mean, we introduced Sen or any hypervisor, and saying that just because we're running in a hypervised environment means we won't have security issues. And it's like, well, we're just going to have bugs in Sen that we will, that'll be discovered. That, oh, bugger! Here's a way that we can actually get Sen root or Sen access that we didn't think about before. So I mean, it's not that different from any other, like having hardware bugs or other software bugs. They'll just be in a different place. It'll take a little bit longer before people find them. But if we find some interesting exploits, people will use them too. Any other questions? One down the front here.
Do you think there are any showstopper problems for scalability with Zen? Is it going to boot on 1024-way one day and perform easily?
I think in principle there shouldn't be. From what I've seen so far, I don't see any reason why we can't get Zen to perform on a large system. With current code base, yes, there are problems. Real problems. But if we took the right steps, I think we could do it. Whether people want to do it or not, I don't know. But I mean, there when you have a large system like ours, there are interesting usage cases. I mean, there's always the certified software situation and things like that, which is of interest. And so for that, it's valuable. Would I run if the reason why I buy a box is to run a specific simulation in MPI mode, over 1024 processors, I wouldn't boot Sen on it. It would just be stupid. Kind of like if I'm running Linux on my laptop all the time and I'm never ever going to want to run anything else, why would I put Sen on my laptop? It's a bit the same thing. But I think we can get it to perform well, or well enough that the people who want to use their machine for primarily one thing, but occasionally wants to pull in, say, an old version of SLES or Red Hat or something else, and they can have it pop up in a window. We can do it, and then have the primary one still perform well. But that's it's a bit like pulling stuff out of the hat, but I mean, it's my feeling for it.
I work for CSIRO HPSC, so we actually own an Altix. We're actually really interested in gaming, obviously, a while before it's ready for prime time, for job suspension. So it gives us a way of isolating batch jobs completely from each other, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, you've got this job that's going to eat up 3 months of CPU time. Whenever we've got shorter-term jobs that we want to throw at the system, bang, you go to sleep, we bring up other stuff. Because, I mean, coming from a HPC environment, that's an almost assumed part of a big compute system, and that's a really big hole that SDI don't have.
Can you do most of that with CPU set?
You can't really do the suspension because you're still too touchy-feely with the rest of the system. I mean, sockets mean you lose anyway, but yeah.
Try and talk to Paul Jackson about whether he could extend CPU set to cover some of that stuff in an intelligent way. I mean, it has to be said, as a kernel developer, my primary use of development system tends to be, okay, make a change, do this, okay, that didn't work, let's try again, do this, that didn't work, let's try again, or boot it and run a benchmark to see how did my changes affect. I'm not, you know, the regular users are getting in each other's way, it's not really my domain, but that's, you know, I still believe that, you know, the main reason why we have an operating system is so it can, you know, get up and boot Emacs.
Sorry, what was that person's name again?
Pardon? Paul Jackson, pj@fgi.com.
I just want to say, if you only want a suspend job, then you don't really need suspend for that, because there are lots of solutions to do user-level suspend, and there's other kernel-level solutions. They're not applied yet in 3, but, for example, OpenVZ, for example, is pretty good on that. No, not, I mean, for example, 1.1, I'm not sure it has been tried yet on IELTS before, but probably could be well reported, but there's, for example, kernel-level implementations like the one included in OpenVZ that can even can migrate even subsets of processes between machines. Basically, the same thing with Stan is doing.
I know the VZ guys actually have an IS-64 port.
Yeah.
So the VZ guys, from my point of view, the container stuff is more, I mean, it's basic containers. Personally, I think it's mostly of interest to, I mean, web servers and that kind of thing. Not really for high computing, high batch kind of, or HPCC computing style stuff. But I mean, take a look at that too. I think your best bet is actually looking at doing something which will allow you to suspend everything within a CPU set. That's my guess. But I mean, try and talk to Paul and see if he might have ideas for how to extend CPU sets to deal with that. Rusty?
Just try setting a CPU set to 0. I don't think it currently allows it. That would suspend it.
Okay.
We're at the time.
Thank you.
Okay. Cool. And everybody have a great lunch. And we'll see you.